Good morning to each of y'all. I'd like to greet you in Christ's name. It's good to be here this morning. It really is. Nice spring morning that the Lord gave us. And I'm glad for all the visitors. Sam got his brother here, or he did. Right now I can't get my eyes on him. Junior was here, and Heidi's back, and Myron's boy's here. So welcome to all of y'all. So, we just got back from Versailles, Missouri. Titus had taken me and Sean up there for an Anabaptist financial seminar. So to say that some of what I learned in the last 2 days isn't going to seep out in this message would probably be an understatement. For those of you that have never been to one of their workshops, I would suggest you go sometime if you have a chance, especially you business leaders. It was, I felt like my brain was about the size of a thimble and they tried to put about 9 yards of concrete into it. And I felt a little overwhelmed, but that's okay. It's okay. I'm still trying to grasp everything I learned there. One of the things they said there was, we men tend to think in waffle squares, little squares at a time, and women tend to think like spaghetti. And that's not a slam on women. That's just the differences between us two, between men and women. Sometimes it'd be nice to be able to think of a whole bunch of things at the same time and still keep my hands busy. I'm not like that. And so this morning, my little waffle square feels like it's mounded with spaghetti, if you know what I mean. It's everywhere. So just, and you poor people have to sit there and listen to me. So God bless you as you do that. This is not a message on business. But what they shared there at that meeting was a lot of business insight, and it almost always applies directly to church life and personal life. It's not that much big of a difference between the two. It's not. Business is a holy calling for you all that are business owners. Don't take it lightly. It's a lot of times we look at it as a means of making sure we are well taken care of and taking care of our family and making so we can have plenty of food to eat. That's kind of how I tend to look at it sometimes. But it's not that. It's a holy calling of being able to serve people in the community, and at the same time you get the blessing of reaping a financial reward. You get the blessing of reaping a spiritual reward when you help them in more ways that are just than physical. It's a blessing. In so many different ways. I could use so many examples. When Ernie put gutter on my shop and it kept rainwater from going down the back of my shirt when I walk in the door, he might have just, in his mind, put gutter on the shop. But he just saved me a nuisance and cleared up that little spot in my brain that now I have time for something else. That's just one little example. So whatever your job is, whether you're fixing cars or putting in garage doors or whatever, you're serving people and you're making their life a little easier. Don't forget that. And another thing about business that is so neat, you have people that will call you, and they ask you to come serve them. Guess what? If they trust you enough to ask you to serve them physically, that's probably also a good indicator they trust you with other things. Maybe that's a chance for you to touch them spiritually. Maybe that's a chance for you to touch them in prayer while you're out there. Maybe you discover some needs that they have. Just something to think about. I have so many opportunities in my work of meeting people, and so do every one of y'all. And so often it's here to here, and let's go. We got a schedule and we got to do it. And we need to take time to look at people as individuals and know that they have needs. And they have more needs than just physical needs. I have more needs than just physical needs. We need to look at it as a mission field. I'm so guilty of this myself. It's so easy to put money, and a fair chunk of money, if I feel the need, into the mission offering. And I toss it in there, and I think, I have done my mission work, and now I'm done, and I'm ready to go. Don't look at it like that. Don't fall into that trap. Everywhere you go, it is so right to send people across the seas on missions. I'm not saying we shouldn't. We need to do that. We need to support them and all of that. But don't forget your own mission. If God put you here in Strawberry, Arkansas this morning, your mission is right here to serve people. Don't ever forget about that. Support your missions across the seas. Please do. But your prayer and my prayer every morning needs to be, Lord, help me to see the needs in this community that God put right in front of me. Because there are needs here. And you can fill them, and you can fill them, and I can fill them if I let God work through me. Don't forget that. So if they taught this in the class, so Sean and Titus, you're not allowed to answer. But the Bible has a very basic, perfect base for every person's business. Some of the best business advice you could ever imagine to get. We look at the Bible as something to help us spiritually, and it is. But it can help you in your business life too. So if you can think of one of the most foundational, basic business tips in the Bible, what comes to your mind? The golden rule. Who said that? I thought it was Titus. I was about to get on to him. You're right. The golden rule. Matthew 7. I'm going to read that. Matthew 7, 12. This isn't going to be our main text, but I'm going to start there. Matthew 7, 12. Therefore, all things whatsoever you would that men should do to you, do ye even so to them. For this is the law and the prophets. Why is that so hard to understand? It's not hard to understand, but why is that so hard to do? It sounds so perfect to say it up here. It sounds spiritual. It sounds great. It sounds all of that. It sounds righteous and, you know, maybe even easy to do right now. But you know what? In real life, that is hard. Maybe not for y'all, but that is hard. To really, truly want what is best for others. Whether that is in church brotherhood, whether that's out meeting customers and people, to actually want to serve them better than I would want to be served myself. And you know what, you business leaders and owners, and if that is not the basis of why you do what you do, I think you're going to struggle. And if that is, if y'all truly grasp that, I think I'm almost safe in saying your business has a 100% chance of succeeding. I don't know if I can say that or not, but your business, if you can start it out on that, doing unto others as you would have them do unto you, you have such a head start on everybody else out there. Think about that. The selfish root of not wanting to do that is so hard to pluck out. So hard to pull that out of my life. I want to point out something else in this chapter. I don't know if y'all's Bibles have headings or not, but it's what caught my eye. So Matthew 7 here, the first section there on my Bible says, do not judge others. The second section says, effective prayer. Now, I know y'all might not have the same Bible I do, but that I'm going by my heading. And then it's the golden rule. So we have do not judge others, effective prayer, and then we have the golden rule. What would happen if I structured my lack of love for people in that order? Suppose I have a problem with somebody. And my first, what if I ran it through this filter? First of all, I'm not going to judge him. I don't know what all those people have been through, and so I'm not going to judge where they're at right now. I started there. And then I took it to prayer, and I truly prayed for those people. And I really wanted the best for them. And then from there, I took it to the golden rule, and I decided in my heart I'm not going to do anything to those people that I wouldn't want done to myself. Do you think that would change my love for those people that I might be struggling with? You're right, it would. Absolutely, it would. I don't think it's a mistake that it's in here in this order. So next time I have a struggle with somebody, if I can remember to run it through this filter, I wonder if I wouldn't be a lot better off. First of all, don't judge them, pray for them, and then treat them the way I wanted to be treated. And if I still have a problem with what they're doing or whatever, maybe then I can talk to it. But please, run it through that filter before you do. Jesus' entire ministry was based on love for people. A complete love for people. And Jesus was also God. So guess what? He could love people perfectly. He could love them and still be angry at them and throw them out of the temple. He could love them no matter what because he was God. I'm going to fail in that because I'm human. I'm not always going to have that complete, perfect agape love for people because I'm a man. But guess what? It's something I can strive for. It's something I can at least aim at and try to do to the best of my ability. I'm going to fail because I'm a man, but I'm still going to try. I still want to try. All right, the main reading I have this morning will be from Romans 12. We'll just read Romans 12. We'll read 9 through 21. 9 through the end of the chapter. Romans 12:9. Let love be without dissimulation. Abhor that which is evil. Cleave to that which is good. Be kindly affectionate one toward another with brotherly love, in honor preferring one another. Not slothful in business, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord. Rejoicing in hope, patient in tribulation, continuing instant in prayer. Distributing to the necessity of the saints, given to hospitality. Bless them which persecute you, bless and curse not. Rejoice with them that do rejoice, weep with them that weep. Be of the same mind one toward another, mind not high things, but condescend to men of low estate. Be not wise in your own conceits. Recompense no man evil for evil. Provide things honest in the sight of all men. If it be possible, as much as lieth in you, live peaceably with all men. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourself, but rather give place unto wrath, for it is written, Vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord. Therefore, if thine enemy hunger, feed him. If he thirst, give him drink. For in so doing, thou shalt heap coals of fire upon his head. Be not overcome of evil, but overcome evil with good. What a packed chapter. It's almost like God, when he gave us the Bible, gave us a very detailed way of living out the golden rule in here. Going back to verse 9, let love be without dissimulation. What does that mean, dissimulation? When was the last time you heard somebody say, he's dissimulating, it's not really a word we use. It simply means a fake or hypocrisy, a hypocrite. So let our love be fake or be a hypocrite is what he's trying to tell us here. Ever had somebody fake love you, or they were extra sugar sweet or extra sugar nice to you, and you figured out later why. It's usually because they wanted something for you, or they were trying to get their fingers in your wallet, one or the other. It's not a very good feeling. Nobody likes that feeling. Usually you can tell pretty quick after the person left how you might have had the wool pulled over your eyes. Don't be that. He's saying, let's not be that. Love, real love from God, will always have the other person's best interest in mind. Don't forget that. Every time it will. Verses 10 through 11, be kindly affectionate one toward another with brotherly love, in honor preferring one another, not slothful in business, fervent in spirit and serving the Lord. Kindly affectionate, people that actually care. Is that actually me? Do I actually care, or do I do it because it's kind of what's expected of me and I might look kind of dumb if I don't? Is that my reason for doing it? True love won't care whether you look dumb for doing it or not. If you think it's what Jesus would have you to do, what God would have taught you in the Bible to do, go do it whether you look dumb or not. I've never been embarrassed by going out of my way to be kind to somebody. But I have been very embarrassed already when I have not been kind to somebody, and I looked back later and I realized what I did. It happens. It does. In honor preferring one another, it means, that literally means putting somebody else above you. That means actually I can never be top dog, if you want to put it that way. Is that what that means? I think it does. We have to always want to be able to put our brother above us. Not to make, and that doesn't mean we're saying I'm a worm and putting ourselves down in the dirt. That's not what that means. But it means always wanting your brother to have it just a little better than you do. And he even throws business kind of in that same sentence. Did you notice that? Not slothful in business. That means not lazy or not idlesome, not troublesome, not idle. A lot of people want in business today they know they have to do a good job because they have to keep business open. And so they do just enough to keep people coming back. What would happen if we would start in our businesses, for example, going a little bit further and maybe going the second mile in whatever? I've already been with coworkers on the job where it took two of us to make a delivery or whatever, and I'm ready to go, and the people were moving, and he asked if they needed help carrying anything in the house. I think it was a couch or whatever. I would have probably, shame on me, ran off. But we went and helped carry this furniture or whatever it was. And it was a blessing to those people. That little things like that is going the second mile in your business. Keep your eyes open for things like that. Verse 13, distributing to the necessity of the saints and given to hospitality. Given to hospitality is some people are more people than other people. And that's something I can be use such an improvement in. Just some of y'all are so good at opening the doors of your house, spur of the moment, anytime, anywhere, come on over. I'm a little bit more of a, I think everything has to be perfect before anybody comes over, or I know what situation me or my two little boys left the living room in before we went to church, and I don't want anybody to see that. and so it's not perfect, so I can't have anybody over. You know what? At the end of the day, we're all pretty human, and some of us do better. Some of y'all do better at keeping your house cleaned up than we do. Who cares if somebody sees toys on the floor? If you feel the need to be hospitable, it's who we are. Come on over. And I have already been to places where hospitality has not been practiced. And you know how that makes you feel. Makes me want to run right back to good old Arkansas where everybody's friendly, right? So practice hospitality. It's a good thing. It's a good thing. Verse 14, bless them which persecute you, bless and curse not. Well, we wouldn't curse, would we? We wouldn't do that to anybody, would we? We might not actually curse somebody out loud, but maybe in our minds we do sometimes. Maybe in our minds we think less than positive thoughts towards those people. Is that actually that much better? I've had people cuss me out already. It's not a fun thing to go through. But what do I do in that situation? Can I at least be cordial and talk respectfully? Something to think about. Something else to think about, maybe if somebody does cuss you out, whatever, it may be they had a bad experience right before you. They might not even be mad at you. They might be mad at the person they just met that really got under their skin, and you just happened to be the next person in line, and you were handy, and so why not take it out on you? Something else to think about, how many times have you met a gruff-looking man, a man that looks like an absolute grump, and he treats you nice? Now let's go back to the person he met right before he met you. Maybe he met a Christian that was nice and gave him a smile and gave him a reason to go to the next person and be a happy person. Now let's me and you be that first person he met so that the next person he goes to, he has a reason to be nice to. Something to think about. Verse 15, rejoice with them that rejoice, weep with them that weep. Can we do that? Can we celebrate with people when they have success in their lives? Whatever that success is. Maybe somebody, you know what happens a lot of time for me? I see somebody that has been struggling in an area, whatever area that may be, and they pull through, and it may be a struggle I have myself, and they pull through it, and they win that victory. They have that little victory. And I look in there, and I realize I've not been that successful in that area of my life as they have. And before you know it, there can be a little seed of jealousy. Don't let that happen. I have to tell myself all the time, willing to celebrate with people in the little victories they have in their life, even if I'm not as successful in that area as they are. Be happy if somebody won the victory. And in the weep with them that weep, if somebody's going through a rough time, we all go through rough times. Every one of us do. We're all humans. Can we be there for the ones that are hurting? A lot of times, especially that people that live out in the community, they don't live in our circles, we like to tell them they're going through a hard time because they didn't follow the Bible like they should have. Or we have a reason why, we like to tell them the reason why they're going through a hard time. We like to tell them that if they would have lived whatever hurt that they may have, we like to give them a reason why they're hurting and a solution. How about we just get in there with them, and we love those people right where they're at? they're hurting, and the last thing they need to know is there may be times later down the road where we need to explain where they went wrong. But in the midst of their hurt is not a good time to be throwing scripture at them. Several examples come to mind, but I don't think I'll share it. And I think y'all know what I mean. Love the people that are hurting. Love them. I remember a man that it seemed I could do absolutely nothing right for this man. He was in the 40 minutes that I was there, everything was wrong. And it really can, if you can't do anything right for somebody, after a while it's like, why can't I just leave? Why did you ever get us out here anyway? And right before I left, he made mention of the fact that his mother had just died. All of a sudden, it becomes clear why maybe he's coming across the way that he is. Maybe doesn't give him the right to be mean or nasty to everybody that he meets, but I can at least understand why he's making some of the comments that he is. He was hurting. All right, verse 16. Be of the same mind one toward another. Mind not high things, but condescend to men of low estate. Be not wise in your own conceits. Treat everybody the same, is what he's saying. Be as willing to work hard for the person who will never be able to thank you as for the one who can potentially reward you down the road. It's not hard to do work for somebody who you can maybe see where they could help you out someday down the road. Just for an example, I several years ago took a building to Sharp County Judge. Now, is it hard for me to do really good work and be extra nice to that man? Probably not. No, it's not hard at all, because maybe he'll come fix the road in front of my house. Maybe he'll... What's the downside of being short and gruff with a man like that? Do that to go there versus a place where they probably shouldn't have made the purchase that they did, and it's a hot day, and they're not very nice to you, and ... whatever else. To do the same type of work for those people takes... It's harder. It's harder. But I need to be just as willing to do as good a job for those people as I am for the county judge, if you want to use that example. I think we Anabaptist people learned... We know the golden rule, and we know what it can do to business and business profits and all that. And sometimes I'm a little afraid we do it more to raise our profits than we do for the actual love of the people. Do I do my work in such a way that I do it because I actually love the people? Or do I want to quick collect what they owe me and run out the drive? What's my reason for doing it? All right, moving on to verse 17. Recompense no man evil for evil. Provide things honest in the sight of all men. We know about that, don't we? Evil for evil. Think about the Hatfields versus the McCoys. We know that story. What would have happened if one of them would have, instead of getting back at the other one, would have suddenly decided, enough of this, I'm not gonna fight back, and I'm gonna love them? We probably wouldn't know that story today, and I don't think that's even necessarily a real story. But it's something interesting to think about. How much trouble could have they saved themselves if somebody would have been willing to stop the cycle of fighting and start the cycle of loving? Verse 18, if it be possible, as much as lieth in you, live peaceably with all men. there's always going to be obstinate, hard to get along with people out there. About the time we think we moved on and we're done with that obstinate person, we'll face another one down the road. It's just kind of the way it seems to work. I'm kind of glad that phrase is in there as much as it is possible, because it's not always possible. There's just some people that just seemingly never are going to be easy to get along with. But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't try. That doesn't mean we shouldn't try. We need to at least try. Verse 19, "Dearly beloved, avenge not yourself, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord." He's saying, don't try to get back and don't try to get even with those people. Some of us, including me, can get pretty stealthy in this area. Because what happens when I go out to a customer's place and they were kind of a jerk to me, and of all things, they come back and they buy another building, and I have to go back out there again? Am I going to have that memory in the back of my head? And there's 101 little ways I could get back at them if I wanted to. Am I going to keep in the back of my head, what would Jesus do in this situation? Am I going to be just as willing to work hard for those people the second time around when they were mean to me the first time? I think that's what Jesus would have done. And that's hard to do for me. That is sometimes hard to do. That doesn't mean we can get by with it, though. We need to love those people. Let God deal out the vengeance. Verse 20, "Therefore, if thine enemy hunger, feed him. If he thirst, give him drink, for in so doing, thou shalt heap coals of fire on his head." If we truly do that verse, there's not going to be any smell of singed hair in the air. You know what I mean? Sometimes, yeah, we'll do it, but you kind of hope you get that singed hair smell out of the deal at least. That's not what Jesus would have done. It's not what he would have done. And then the last verse. "Be not overcome of evil, but overcome evil with good." There's no way, I don't believe, that people who... I've met people who don't consider themselves Christians, and I've seen them be nice to people that weren't nice to them. It is possible for a non-Christian to treat somebody else kindly when they've been wronged. But I think I'm right in saying this. Eventually, that person is going to reach a point in their life, sometime, somewhere, something's going to happen, and they're going to have a response that isn't right. The only way I can most or all of the time have the right response when I've been treated wrong is if I truly have Christ in my life and I truly want what's best for the other person. So going on into the last part here. I was talking a lot about doing unto others outside in the community around us. And we people have been taught all our lives about non-resistance and loving our enemies. And we've been taught the golden rule. And we know it's the best, most productive way to live our Christian lives. And so we do it because we've been taught that. Or we try. But seldom do we have to actually run from an enemy that's physically trying to hurt us. I don't know if anybody, maybe some of us in this room have, but we don't usually get chased around with swords and we have to turn around and be nice to these people. We don't live in a time like that right now. We like to have all the hypothetical discussions about what we would do in those situations and how we would be non-resistant. But really, it's not something we necessarily face on a day-to-day basis here where we are. There's places that do. And we like to talk about how we can love those people out there right where they're at. And we can look past the tattoos and we can look past all their rough spots and we can love them anyway. That's true, that's right, and that's good to talk about. But I guess the challenge I want to leave with y'all here this morning and for myself is I like to think it involves the people out there. But what about the church brethren right here? Are the ones that are right next to us on the pew? What about them? See, with church, the difference between church brethren here, we see their failures. I see y'all's failures, y'all see my failures. And that's not always easy to look past. Out there, we talk to them for a while, and then they're gone. There's something easy about being nice to somebody that you may not have to see but once a year or maybe once a life or whatever that is. But when, it's right here in the church is where a lot of these struggles, I think, come from, at least for me. The brethren that I have to work with on a day-to-day basis. And we see these struggles among us sometime. I see them, and y'all see them. And too often, I'm just fine with letting that brother struggle. You know, he didn't take my advice anyway. Go figure it out. If you're that smart on your own, go figure it out. And I have these thoughts that go through my mind. It's their problem after all, isn't it? They got themselves in this mess. They've been like this for years. Or maybe y'all are looking at me and y'all can say, I've been like that for years. I'm probably never going to change. And before we know it, we are not treating that brother the way we would want to be treated. We are not giving him the benefit of the doubt. And all of a sudden, this is one of my the saddest things in the Anabaptist circles that I see. Eventually that festers and you see a church bust apart at the seams and it goes four different ways or five different ways. And it happens over and over in our Anabaptist circles. What is it that we don't get? We get loving our neighbor. We get the Good Samaritan story. We get all those stories, but when it comes right down here in this church building or in men's meetings or wherever it is, all of a sudden we can't quite lay down all the way. All of a sudden there's something that, no, this is my line, and this is where I'm going to stand, and if it pushes the church apart, who cares? And sometimes it seems it happens so casually. Why is that? Where is my love for my brother, and why can't I simply lay down what's... It's so sad. It's such a poor witness to the community around us that we think we have it right when we come to non-resistance, and I think we do. We think we have it right when it comes to loving our brother, but we can't get along in our church circles. What's wrong with us? What's wrong with me? Galatians 5:13-15. For brethren, ye have been called unto liberty. Only use not liberty for an occasion to the flesh, but by love serve one another. For all the law is fulfilled in one word, even this, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. But if ye bite and devour one another, take heed that ye be not consumed one of another. We just had that in Sunday school class not too long ago. I wonder if he's saying it's okay to have those, it's okay to have hard conversations. Come together and talk tough conversations through. But don't let it be so rough that it's going to cause a church split or a lifelong friendship split. I wonder if that's what he means by the, if you bite and devour one another, take heed you be not consumed. It's okay to have constructive criticism if it's done out of a heart of pure love for the other person. But if you feel your blood pressure rising, like mine does sometimes, or you start looking down at the other person, it's probably a good time to stop talking. And it's probably time for me to start realizing I need to serve that person. All right, and all of this, I do want to say here at the end, we are to love each other, but you do not have to love another person's behavior. There is such a thing as loving a person and not loving and endorsing everything that they're doing. There are times that you have to separate yourself from people because they're not going to change, and they're being a bad influence on your family or on me. But that doesn't mean you stop loving those people. I think this is where some of the Anabaptist circles for years, I say this very carefully, but I think they used excommunication wrongly. Some groups, it seems like, use excommunication almost as a tool of revenge on the person. I don't think excommunication should ever be used as a means of revenge or getting back at the person. I think it needs to be used very carefully and with a lot of prayer and consideration from the church brethren. It is not something to do lightly. And I think if a church does it, it had better be done with the whole congregation's approval, that it's done purely out of love and seeking redemption for the person. That's my thoughts on it. If y'all think I'm wrong, you can tell me. All right, in closing, 1 Timothy 1, verse 5. Now the end of the commandment is charity. That word charity actually means agape love. So we could read it this way. Now the end of the commandment is agape love out of a pure heart and of a good conscience and faith unfeigned. Faith unfeigned means not fake, but real, out of a real love. My father-in-law taught me something that I knew, but I've never forgotten. He said, never forget there are always two sides to a story. So as we look at the needs and issues around us, don't forget there's always two sides to the story. And don't just look at what people are doing, but look at the people and ask them, why are they doing it? Everybody does what they do for a reason. Why are they doing what they're doing? It's not always what they're actually doing, but what's the reason behind it? If we can see that, I think it'll help us with loving each other like we need to. That's all I have. Thank y'all for listening. Why don't we kneel for prayer?